This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on... on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space. And I'm about to die.
We need an opening.
Found one.
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace. Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
This is Darth Texas, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi with Dan Z and Corey Club. This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome to Rebels Reactions, where Coffee with Kenobi examines Star Wars Rebels through a critical lens. On today's show, we will be discussing Rebel Resolve, the 12th episode in Season 1. Joining us today on Rebels Reactions is longtime listener and friend of the show, Darth Taxis. His Twitter account is must-follow for Star Wars fans, and we are happy to have him join us for a cup of coffee. Welcome, Darth Taxis.
Well, thank you very much. My wife, the Lady Taxis, thought I was insane for brewing up a nice fresh cup tonight. Dark Lord Attacks knows to drink coffee whenever it's available. So,
well, there you go. Words to live by.
Indeed.
So we have an intense episode, and I'd love to hear everyone's overall reactions of Rebel Resolve. And Darth Taxis, we'll just start with you.
Well, yeah, I thought that this was somewhat a dark episode compared to, you know, the previous ones. I thought it was also an episode that really showed discovery throughout the characters of it all, that we have Ezra, who we know struggled with being alone in the past. In fact, if I remember from a few episodes in the temple, that was his greatest fear, was being alone. Mm-hmm. And now he is alone, in a sense. I mean, he's not really, but he's lost his mentor. He's lost his master. And you see how he reacts to it and how those around him then react to it. I thought it was more of a setup episode, you might say. Mm-hmm. Didn't quite have the action of the last one. And I imagine there's probably going to be more action in the next one to come. But I think this was a critical episode to really discover who they are. What do they do in the face of adversity? You've just lost possibly one of your greatest weapons that you have in your fight. So how do you go on?
Interesting. Very good points off the top of the show. Corey, what about you?
Yeah, you know, you say that it was kind of a dark episode. I got me thinking, and it was kind of dark. It was kind of a somber mood to it, given the previous episode. Obviously, it's lacking a lot of the main character, the main drive, as Kanan seems to kind of pull the weight sometimes on episodes, and obviously he wasn't as much involved here. So it's interesting to have the other characters kind of come into the spotlight a little more, and then also show their cohesiveness without him as a leader. Obviously, Hera shines in my eyes in this too. Mm-hmm. She just comes back through and through. Just showing how strong she is and how much she can kind of take control of an issue and be, you know, be there to kind of gather things up and get things moving again. And again, like we talked about, there's, you know, these characters, we've been along the journey for so long with Ezra. It's nice to see him kind of take charge a little bit too. And it seems to be like this episode was kind of leading up this whole season, kind of something like this. And it is, yes, it is kind of a shortened episode in a sense where there's more to come. But I also thought it was a nice setup. It wasn't you know, just a filler episode. There's a lot to be said here. A lot of surprises, I think, in regard to some other characters. And I think it was a lot of fun. It was enjoyable enough to you know, finish out the series with the next two, and I look forward to those.
Yeah, I'm still really kind of listening and to hear you both talk and thinking about this. I've watched this episode twice now, and it's a stunner. It's this one and the previous episode, the emotional weight, the gravitas of what's going on. There is real peril, and it's frightening. I found myself legitimately disturbed and really worried for Kanan. And before we get to that, let's just start off at the top of the show. We see ATDPs walking down Lothal.
Mm-hmm.
You hear the music from the Battle of Hoth when the walkers are coming in to attack the rebels. And then we see the crew of the Ghost take over. They just literally jump into the scene. Ezra and Zeb have their best Han and Chewie impression taking over the scout walkers from Return of the Jedi. Sabine's firing away, and Chopper, this is really a stellar Chopper episode, top to bottom.
Yeah,
he shows some serious battle prowess, so quite impressive for a droid who I thought was built with a lot of spare parts, but he does some serious fighting mojo in this, doesn't he, Corey?
He certainly does, and he just shows a lot of resolve as far as how the length he's willing to go to help his crew out. And also I want to make a note, too. As they're attacking the walker there, I kind of had this Indiana Jones Last Crusade tank moment.
Yeah.
You know, where Zeb was kind of trying to look in and Ezra's trying to look out and get out of the way. It was just kind of this, you know, they're trying to accomplish the mission, but they're kind of just getting each other's way and bubbling things up, which I think it played off really, really well.
Oh, yeah. Especially, I thought it was interesting how it's almost like a mirror of how Kanan was in the first episode. I think we see a lot of callbacks to the first episode in this one, because when Ezra jumps into the cockpit, he says, "How you doing?" And it's sort of like Kanan's, if I'm quoting correctly, "How's it going?" You know, kind of a flippant sort of devil may care attitude. And Chopper, boy, you know, he refuses to leave. When they're saying, "Get out of there," he's like, "Uh-uh, I got to do this. I got to keep looking." And that's something to me. It's like, I've never seen such devotion in a droid. Well, you know, Chopper's got it. You know, this was a great Chopper episode.
It is.
And I also loved the music, because I remember from the opening of that, that was cut from Empire, remembering.
The Battle of Hoth. Absolutely.
Yeah. Just that opener, and I love that piano part there to signify just that plotting, you know. And the Empire's finally getting their stuff together and stepping up patrols.
Literally, yes.
Yeah,
you bet. And then there's a lot of irony here as well, because the communications tower is down, so they can't communicate to find where Kanan is, which of course means they have to resort to other measures, more drastic measures. And it's interesting, some of the conversation they have. Sabine says, you know, "I really hate to be a pessimist and all this, but is Kanan still alive?" Well, Ezra is more and more force sensitive and more strong in the force. He knows that Kanan's alive, and he's going to fight to find him. And we, speaking of fighting, we shift real quickly to Kanan in a detention shell.
Yeah.
Tax, as you mentioned, the music from Battle of Hoth, which we talked about a little bit ago. Here we see the music from A New Hope, and Tarkin, when he walks in, very reminiscent of when he walks in, or no, when Vader walks in and they're going to interrogate Princess Leia.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A lot of callbacks in this particular episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was definitely, if not an homage, then I don't know what you can call it.
Direct link.
Well, that's Tarkin in his prime. You know, he has his quarry, he's got him captured, and now he's going to gloat over it a bit, you know, in his haughty way. Which I thought, you know, I keep trying to go back to the book and think about, okay, the difference between young Tarkin and older Tarkin. And, older Tarkin, he's an organizational master. It's just like in the last episode, he comes in and he's almost represented by that classic trilogy of political, military, scientific, and then religious. And he says to the politician, "You failed." And he says to the, you know, military, scientific, you are failing. And he turns to the religious. He says, I'm surprised you're failing to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. I think we see him continuing to lord that. And later, I think we'll see him illustrate that a bit more as well. But go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to come in and say that you know, he's a good job of getting things organized, getting people to do as he wants them to do, but he doesn't get his hands dirty. You know, he's right. Very much of hands behind the back, and I'll watch as this person squirms at my expense as far as getting what I want. You know, he's not dealing out the death blows or the pain to Kanan himself. He's always kind of kept himself separated from that.
Right. Oh yeah, it's almost like Snidely Whiplash if he had a little mustache.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, bet.
I have you.
But you also get the impression too, and I'm sure you'll both agree, that Tarkin, while he doesn't necessarily get his hands dirty, he's not afraid to. I mean, this guy is a warrior. He is a soldier. We saw that from James Luceno's book, and we've seen evidence of that. My goodness, later on in his life, he has no problem destroying an entire planet just to prove a point.
Right.
I mean, he's cold and he's calculating. And as I said at the top of the show, he made me really, really concerned what's going to happen to Kanan. And there's real tension there. We shift back to the battle in Lothal on the streets. You mentioned earlier, Taxus and Corey, about when Zeb can't see through the little narrow passage in the ATDP. I found a lot of symbolism in that with Ezra can't see because Zeb is in the way. I found that was really intriguing. Did you guys notice anything about that stood out to you?
Well, now that you mention it, yeah, it does speak to, I think, their development throughout the rest of this episode. You know, where we've seen in the past that they have been clowning it up and getting each other's way, and actually their antics have caused problems before. That's could have been catastrophic. But now, you know, Zeb actually asks him, well, where should I go? And I believe, if I remember correctly, he tells him, you know, well, just anywhere where I can see, you know. So Zeb's actually deferring to him now almost.
Right, which is quite a paradigm shift.
Oh, definitely. Oh, we see that too. We see that shift occur in, I think, almost every other character in Ezra's life.
Very
in
true. Episode,
so.
Corey, anything with that for you?
Yeah, when you mention that, and as we discuss it here, it makes me think just throughout the episode how much they seem to refer to Ezra on counterpoints or getting his perspective on things. He seems to have obviously something that they don't, you know, in a spiritual or Jedi way, you know, and I do, you know, they do argue about that a little bit, you know, disagree in some respects. But yeah, did you say that? I find that very interesting because even Zeb too, as much as he's the honor guard and he's still looking to, you know, do his part, but yet he needs some direction.
Oh, I like that. I like that. I also found it intriguing that when he's looking through the very narrow opening for the ATDP for the vision, I feel like he's got such a focus. Like there's such a focused line of view here, and he can't see everything clearly because he's focusing so much on his friends, right? Zeb is in the way and he's going left and right, and he's trying to look around him, but he also can't. That's his complete line of vision. That's his complete focus. I thought it was a very powerful metaphor.
Yeah, I also thought it spoke to the failure of the Imperials to put adequate video cameras in their cockpits to where they can actually see.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, overconfidence, right? They're overconfidence. Right.
They are. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Very, very powerful stuff. And then, as you mentioned, Chopper stays behind to the last possible moment. I mean, literally the last possible moment. The animation here with the walker falling into the other walker, I thought that animation was absolutely incredible.
Yeah, and it kind of speaks, again, to what you were saying, being so focused, almost myopic to what's happening around you. That's what happens to the Imperial piloting the other walker, is he just fails to have situational awareness, and that's why he gets, you know, the second one crashes into him. I thought it was a really funny moment.
And Corey, you had brought up a point with me earlier about the rear blaster. Do you want to say anything about that?
Yeah, we had mentioned that in a previous episode. We kind of debated to where if there's a rear blaster mounted on the back. It seems they just come out and say it, that there's no rear blaster on the ATDP. And I think we had questioned that before. And is it in the visual guide that it, I guess we couldn't figure that out. it was the episode where they were on the Imperial base and Ezra was playing playing spy.
When we first met the beloved Zare.
Yes, that's right. So it's interesting they kind of make that comment. I didn't know if that was something that maybe fans had in their mind as a question, or if a higher up model, I'm trying to think of the another Walker model would have a back blaster, and we see it obviously in future movies or something like that. I'm trying. Sure. I can't. My mind can't wrap myself around it right now. But
well, and of course you bring that up when I have my visual guide upstairs. Thanks.
Yeah. Ditto.
Yeah. So I'm not sure. It's a good food for thought, though, to be sure. And speaking of food for thought, Fulcrum is revealed not fully, but we see Fulcrum. We actually see a visual of what Fulcrum looks like, and of course, it's a hooded figure via a hologram. We see here I was speaking with, and I don't need to tell either of you gentlemen that we don't do spoilers. I have no clue what the theories are about who Fulcrum is or isn't, and I'm good with that. I do want to point out, I tried to write down everything that was said, and this is basically what Fulcrum said. Your mission was to be unseen, unnoticed. Highest levels of the Empire are aware of this, and you. If you are caught, if Ezra is caught, hope will die. To protect your unit, to protect Ezra, you must give up your search for Kanan and go into hiding. So, Corey, what is your opinion, overall thoughts on this particular important scene?
Yeah, definitely. This is definitely
Fulcrum again, the term Fulcrum right there.
Yes, the term Fulcrum always being a lever of advantage in any situation. And it's interesting because this character has been such a mystery throughout this whole series, and everybody's had their, you know, reservations or ideas of who this may be, and we don't go into it too much, but you know, we certainly, our minds like to dissect, but it's nice to see a visual, it's nice to see a hooded figure and kind of give some context to them. The voice itself is clouded. Mm-hmm. It's a mixture of you know, a female and a male voice, I believe.
Yeah, androgynous.
Very. I think it was a nice scene because it shows me too that Hera is grasping at straws. She's not sure what to do, you know? And then the quote you made, that Fulcrum says about being the mission unseen and unnoticed, it makes me think like maybe they're on a totally different playing field here, that they're going outside their own mission, what they're supposed to be doing, and doing these little runs and helping the rebellion. You know, is this something they're not supposed to be doing? Is this something, you know, I just think about that. But I also think, too, it's like, you know, was their mission to find Ezra and keep him safe? Or is that something that Hera only knows about? There's so many questions, you know, with this message. And it brings up my thoughts as far as, you know, going into hiding, Obi-Wan Kenobi going into hiding, Yoda going into hiding and waiting things out. And it just doesn't seem like this crew is that type of that will just wait things out and then hide until things get better. They're more
it's
of
like
a,
the Jedi or mice, and they have to run out.
Yeah,
and they have to go into hiding all the time. But you know, numbers matter, don't they? Mm-hmm. The most intriguing thing to me about this, and I do want to hear what Texas has to say, of course. The most important thing to me is that, according to Fulcrum, at least in this particular piece of dialogue, Ezra's the new hope, and it says if. If he's caught, hope will die. They're hanging all of their hopes on Ezra. That's a lot of pressure for a young man. Very Harry Potter-esque, honestly, to put all your cards onto one particular individual. I found that really, really intriguing how important he is. And this becomes very military, which is a motif we see prevalent throughout this. Texas, what about you with all this?
Yeah, you know, I thought it was brilliant how they were disguising the voice and modulating it to where it sounds, you know, like you said, androgynous. We all know it really is Sebulba. Sorry, Dan. I thought her reference to Ezra, let's say Fulcrum's reference to Ezra.
Mm-hmm.
I thought
Sebulba's a guy. I thought. Sorry, go ahead.
I know what he's leading to.
I don't know. You got to look under him. And, I'm not going to get that close. I thought that the reference to Ezra was sort of an effort, maybe to rein Hera in, You know, we know Hera has been the point of contact. Hera is the cell leader, in effect. She's the one who's behind the lines and who's passing on information from the allies, thing like that. The rest of them, you know, I think that Ezra might have just been a happenstance, but it's a good happenstance to them, and they're taking advantage of it. And I think that whoever Fulcrum is trying to, you know, what happens when your cell gets blown? You go to ground, right? You don't stick your head out. Like you said, you just find your holes and you hide until the heat blows over. And I guess maybe if I was a military leader and I was looking at the situation, I'd say, hey, we need to go back to this plan. You've got somebody who clearly has some force sensitivity and skills. Don't risk losing everything just because of one person. You know, it's a hard call to make.
It is. It is, especially when to Ezra, this isn't, you know, you mentioned, Corey, something really that really was interesting about, well, you know, what is their end game? If they want to raise awareness, but what is the purpose? If they haven't already made little strides, what are they going to do? Hide and then materialize with a gigantic army to fight the Empire? You have to, if you look at this as a domino effect, and I mean, they strike a major blow to raise awareness, as we saw in the previous episode, very, very powerfully. So this is interesting. You wonder what Fulcrum has in mind, and apparently it seems to be Jedi-centered if they're really worried about Ezra. Hope will die without Ezra. No mention of really Kanan being the hope, but I think they're ready, or Fulcrum is ready to wash her hands of it. But I don't know. It's there's a lot to see here. Sabine says, you know, look, we can't make a plan based on a feeling, and referring to Ezra. And Ezra says, look, you know, we do this all the time. And then Hera says something that starts to make some conflict. She refers to Kanan as a soldier. Ezra does not take to that very well. And that's because Hera maintains, look, we need to honor the choice that he made. This is a sacrifice that he chose. But he and Chopper are not having anything to do with that. Texas, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's almost like Hera there was trying to convince herself to say,
oh, yes.
You know, she doesn't like this any more than Ezra or anybody else in that crew. And she's saying, look, he's a good soldier, you know, but he made his choice and we have to honor that. She's almost saying like, well, I have to honor that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we really see Ezra taking the, you know, typical role of the headstrong Padawan here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I think in his next action, he does a service in that he does it without letting Hera know what's going to happen.
He doesn't let his anger get the best of him either.
No, yeah, you're right. He doesn't. He's trying to control himself. You know, we see, I think, a couple of times where he's starting to creep a little closer to something that maybe he shouldn't. But he...
But no more so than anyone, really. I mean...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, honestly, if anyone's at risk of turning to the dark side in this episode, it's Chopper.
Oh, yeah. The kids and I know.
We'll get to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll definitely get to that. He has some issues.
I'll say.
He's got to work out. You know?
I'll say.
But yeah, it's, you know, by Ezra just forming a plan with everybody else, and I don't mean to jump ahead on you, it's almost like he's giving Hera, you know, plausible deniability.
Oh, very good.
Mm-hmm. Should she be called to the carpet by whoever the power is that Ezra knows is making her come out and say, we need to leave Kanan.
Yeah. And I kind of thought similar to what Dan was saying was, you know, I feel for Hera because obviously Kanan and Hera have a relationship that's very sacred to both of them. And I felt bad for her. She's taking it hard, and it's almost like she had to check with Fulcrum to say, is there anything we can do? You know? And it seems like Fulcrum came back and said, you know, there's really, you know, you just need to, you know, keep Ezra safe and move on with the plan and go into hiding and not worry about Kanan right now because he's made his decision. And she has to kind of, like you said, she has to into the group there. She has to kind of uphold that a little bit. And you can tell in her body language and her voice, she doesn't, she, you know, it's hard for her to make that decision and go along with that. So you guys are definitely dead on with all that. I love it.
Oh, well, cheers, sir.
Yeah, it's very good.
Thank you.
That's there's just a lot to disseminate through all this. And Hera's shows that vulnerability and the more well-rounded nature that we love about her, she's the most adult. I mean, she has to make the tough choices and she does not like them. And we see the angst, you know, in her face, in the way she's carrying herself. Vanessa Marshall, of course, does a phenomenal job in this. Just really, really powerful. And speaking of powerful, I think I saw one of the most wonderful scenes in this entire series. And that is when Chopper and Ezra share this incredible moment. Mm-hmm. They unite, they make this plan, and he's comforting Chopper. And we haven't seen anything even close to that. And I know that Chopper's are like the line is that he's like the family cat. Mm-hmm. But he seems much more like a lovable dog that is like showing full anthropomorphism. Very very much very much in tune with his emotions. And he and Ezra, they make this very serious shift where they're going to go against what's going on. They're going to go against Hera, right? I mean, it's a direct order, as Hera mentions later. They start speculating and spitballing about what's going to happen to Kanan. And Hera says really somberly, extremely sadly, look, Kanan doesn't know anything. He can't say anything. And I think that makes it even harder for her that he's in this situation. Mm-hmm. Again, we see that powerful connection that they have that's much deeper than just a typical relationship. I mean, there's just such compassion there. It's really moving. This really is a Hera showcase.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think that the relationship between Chopper and Ezra form or grow stronger here because Chopper's found somebody who's kind of a, you know, companion in arms. That, hey, he's telling me I can misbehave. Usually, you know, I get in trouble when I misbehave, but he's giving me an outlet to do it. Again, I missed that connection. Actually, I was thinking through the characters, but yeah, you spot on.
Corey, anything for you on that?
Yeah, it just, again, Hera, she has this nature about her, and it just comes through in every episode where I think she just seems like to be the strongest character, and you see in these situations, you really feel for her, I think. And in this, certainly in this one, because of Kanan, and it's interesting to see the dynamic because Kanan doesn't have a voice here, and usually he would come up and say something or reassure everybody and come up with a plan that everybody agrees upon, and it's just not there. You could tell, you definitely feel the absence of Kanan.
Yeah, especially since Kanan was typically her sounding board. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was the one he was the one she would turn to, and vice versa. Whenever, you know, my girls and I always say, mom and dad need to talk, you know,
right.
And it is almost that type of relationship. You know, let's face it. Men are pretty, you know, pretty dumb sometimes. And there's a lot of things that my wife will say to me, like, what were you thinking? And I'm like, well, honey, honestly, I wasn't, or that was pretty cool at the time. But now she's lost that. She's lost that confidence. And she doesn't have – and plus, you can imagine what she's going through trying to think, what is he going through? You know,
right.
He's at the hands of Tarkin. You know, they have entire towns named after him.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I do want to point out, we talk about Hera. Sabine, we find out, is part of the plan with Chopper as well. We don't see how she becomes a part of it, but just it's very understood. And because she says, were they orders or more like her opinion? Mm-hmm. It becomes extremely easy for them to convince Zeb, which is not really a surprise. So I got to ask you, Corey, has Hera lost sight of what they're fighting for, or is it the crew that's lost sight of what they're fighting for?
You know, I think Hera is in a difficult position, as we've been talking about here. She has to keep the main focus on the overarching mission that they're actually on, and we don't know that yet. We only know bits and pieces, I think. And this was the biggest episode to have the most explored in that area. So I kind of I'm kind of in her corner a little bit, where she's fighting for the good, but it's hurting her. It's destroying her on the inside. I can just see it, you know. She's still trying to do the right thing. Has she lost her ability to fight for, you know, what the rebels do? I don't think so. Have the other three, or ever other four? I don't think so either, because they see it differently, and that's what makes the crew so great of the Ghost. Mm-hmm. They all have different reactions to different situations, and when one of the crew are in jeopardy, you know, they all link together and work together as a family. So I don't necessarily think anybody's lost their way. I think they're just looking at different perspectives.
Hmm. Well said. Only a Sith deal in absolutes, and you pass the test.
Yes.
Wait a minute. Isn't that an absolute?
It is. Absolutely.
Absolutely, yes.
All right, Taxes, what do you think? Has anyone lost sight, or is it just sort of this is tricky.
I don't think that they've necessarily lost sight, in that I think they're all resolved. They all know what they have to do. They have to get Kanan back. Why? Because that's what he would do for them. Mm-hmm. And without that relationship, without that trust, none of what they accomplished could have happened. And I just think it's just fascinating how Ezra just steps into the leadership position, and you've got Sabine just, you know, okay, what now? Okay, tell me what are we doing now? You know, and that is such a change in her, because previously he's chasing around and she's rolling her eyes at him, mm-hmm. you know. And now she's looking to him for leadership, and like a good leader, I think he basically has the goal. He's got the plan, and he tells the people, okay, this is what we're going to do. Now use your talents to get us there.
Yes.
You know, and so I, you know, and well, we'll see what happens with it, but you know,
exactly. And there's just a lot of potential here for some very powerful narrative. And I thought it was interesting for Chopper to make the distraction. He overloads the internal comm, so he creates an overabundance of communication to distract from the fact that they're not really communicating with each other, which I found ironic. And then when the Phantom disembarks from the Ghost, I thought that was incredibly symbolic as well, because they're literally divided, and now they are so divided in their family that their family splits apart. I mean, that literally happens. There's always so much incredible symbolism and metaphor in this show, and it's not lost, and it's wonderful to see.
The kids stole the car.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
My thought was, you talk about symbolism, Dan. You're a big speaker of that, and watching this episode, we always kind of talk. Hera is kind of the mother of the group, and as these four, go on their mission. Mm-hmm. Or sorry, three go on their mission. It's almost as if, you know, they're being birthed into a new era of their characters.
My man.
You like that? Yeah.
I do.
Yeah, I just thought about that, and I think that, you know, it's like this whole episode we've been talking about, everybody seems to be acting a little bit different. They're still themselves, but, you know, it seems Ezra's taking that leadership role and as you said, Taxus, that Sabine is kind of going along with everything that he says, and Zeb's right on cue. So it's our characters, but they're grown with the absence of Kanan. So it's a very interesting dynamic, and certainly grows them as a group.
I think synergy is the word, the business word we need for the evening.
That's right. And noted. That's right. So we go back to Kanan, and he's able to resist the mind probe, and again, another callback to A New Hope, as are all Jedi. Tarkin is still not completely convinced that Kanan is a Jedi, so the Inquisitor shows up, is very maniacal and frightening, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. And he says, look, my solution is pain. Jedi still feel pain. And then Kanan, I like how Kanan handles this. It's very in character with him, but it's also very different from what we've seen him as well. He says, I see you getting more and more frustrated, but he's not cocky. It's not like he's verbally spitting in his face. He's just very direct and blunt, and then he gets hit with lightning, you know, the Sith lightning. They seem to be synonymous with one another.
Yeah, fun with this lightning. This is
one of those moments when the camera went away. I was relieved, and I was also horrified because I wanted it to go away because I didn't want to see Kanan get hurt. And a lot of that is Freddie Prinze Jr. in the way that, you know, he hits out of the park night after night with this show. But you really feel for these characters, and I've been saying this all throughout Rebels Reactions, but because we don't know the fate of any of these characters, there's real risk there, and I really get concerned. I mean, I don't think Kanan's not going to be in season two or anything, but I don't know that for sure, and that makes this so much more dramatic and powerful.
Oh, yeah. Last episode, they kind of took a little Game of Thrones detour on us, and
yes.
that was shocking to me. And did you see how Kallus looked at the Inquisitor when he walked in? Boy, could you just see the disdain and just, you know, it's Kallus. It's interesting. I've been trying to form what the hierarchy is here. And we know, even though Tarkin's made little snide comments to the Inquisitor, I don't think that Tarkin really controls the Inquisitor. And
although he does sit at his side like a lapdog, like Vader in A New Hope.
A little bit, I mean, yeah.
He literally stands behind him and on his right-hand side, so he's literally his right-hand man.
Right, but then when it comes to matters of you know, more delicate nature, like torture, you know, they're partners. You know, he... And it's funny because here is where Tarkin, what does Tarkin say to Kallus? You know, I think he says something to the effect, and I'm sorry, this is my third iteration of notes today. He said, you know, I'm grown tired of your methods, if I remember correctly, I might be paraphrasing. And again, that's when the Inquisitor walks in, and we see a shift now from the technology to, you know, the spiritual, the religious aspect, you know.
Right.
He's not sure how to get through to him, so I'm going to turn to the expert in these matters.
Right.
But I found the torture scene very shocking. I know somebody had to do it.
Zing! Yeah.
Thank you. And also interesting, did we see a Sith mind trick?
I know. I thought that as well, or at least an attempt.
Well, I even thought it was kind of like they were definitely in that spiritual realm of mind trick versus mind trick, and you know who's going to come out with the top card type thing, and nobody else can play it but them. And these two have obviously come against each other numerous times, so it was just one more avenue of them just putting, you know, their powers up against each other.
Yeah, and that's also kind of speaks. I've seen the character of the Inquisitor throughout the series. It's like, okay, why can't anybody catch these rebels? It's because the Inquisitor wants to test himself against somebody who's closer to a Jedi than he's ever been. Mm-hmm. And here, again, is another test. It's not necessarily with the saber. It's with their command of the Force.
Right.
And it's, I thought that was a great scene, especially the Force sound, you know.
Yes.
Doing it. And I just wondered, I was like, wow, you know, is that his version? Because he's hurting him, but he's also making suggestions to him. You know, he's not saying, you know, tell me where it's at. He's saying, you will tell me where this is at. Almost with that lilting tone of voice, melodic, trying, you know, like inviting him, just give in to it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's sadistic is what it is.
Oh, yeah. Not as sadistic as Chopper, but.
True. Well, in a different way. Yeah, of course. All right. So we shift to a different, we have a paradigm shift of a particular nature. Where we get to the gray, and that is in Visago, of course. Ezra, Sabine, and Zeb go and they seek out Visago for help, and he won't do it because the Empire has made things all kinds of difficult. And then Ezra, despite Sabine's insistence, plays the Jedi card. And I won't summarize what happened. I don't want to use the summary to kind of take away either of your perception, but Corey, what do you think of that whole particular scene? What happened there?
Yeah, I was surprised, really, honestly, that Ezra gave it away, even after Sabine said no, and they were even like, kind of like, don't. That's one of the biggest secrets we have, you know. But I also felt, even after he had done it, I felt he needed to do that because they're at their end. They needed to. I think Ezra had planned to do that anyway. I mean, regardless of what anybody else would have said, I think he was, it was his plan all along, was to kind of reveal something a little big, larger, and then obviously, you know, holds his ground. I was kind of applauding Ezra here. He's really grown up, and he's definitely, you know, come eye to eye a little bit with some of these folks that he's come in contact with throughout the season, and really shown some adulthood here.
Going back and watching it, I really wanted to pay attention to this because, again, this is like the deal with the Deveronian, right?
Right.
And I know it's expanded universe now, but we all know about Uncle Billy and exactly what he was. Every chance he would get, he'd, you know, turn on you if it meant more credits in his pocketbook. And that's kind of the way Visago is. You can look at the character Visago, right? And does, for henchmen, for workers, what does he have? He has droids.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because he doesn't have to worry about whether he can trust them or not. He can program them so right. that he can trust them. So Ezra, I think, knows that what he wants is information, because he's an information dealer. And what better way to get his attention by dangling, you know, hey, I'm going to let you into the big secret here. You know, this is the circle of trust, right? And I thought that, boy, was Ezra threatening him to a certain extent?
Well, that's the thing that hits me. No pun intended. Yeah, he levitates that cargo over Visago's head to demonstrate his Jedi abilities. Visago seems legitimately afraid, which, I mean, he hasn't been in the series all that much thus far, but he seems scared. I think you could argue that it's not a very Jedi tactic. And I don't think it was an overt threat, but it was certainly passive-aggressive. I don't think there's much denying that. But Ezra, I guess he pretty much had to play that Jedi card because something had to get Visago's attention. And it does, and then we get into sort of Godfather territory because we've got a bit of a bargain here that struck. And Ezra has to agree to whatever Visago asks, and he basically says, yeah, but I'm not going to tell you right now what that is. Maybe later. Maybe I'll tell you tomorrow. Or, you know, he's just going to hold right. that up against him. It's very much like the devil striking the deal for your soul. And Hera shows up. She kind of seems to feel that same way because it's all wrapped around a maybe. There's not even a guarantee that it's going to work.
Especially because, I mean, you look at Ezra. Ezra walked in there alone to this, and Visago is letting him in, saying, now you're in my inner sanctum, and he forms a contract with him. And I think that that was a big step in how do we know Visago is going to be in the future with them.
Well, and, how about this bow, too?
Oh, yeah.
Bit of comic relief.
Yeah, that was wonderful. I was wondering that, too. I'm like, was he waiting to be anointed? What's
pulls
what's
on
doing?
His little horn, yeah.
Yeah. But and the reactions, what are you doing? You know, you're supposed to bow back. You know, I thought that, especially the reaction of Zeb and Sabine when he's walking into the ship, they're like, no, wait, don't go in by yourself. But again, you know, hey, Ezra's been here. He's had to do this. This was his test. And now he's having to live his test by going in somewhere that's unknown by himself.
Right.
You talk about
it bravely.
You talk about symbolism, Dan. Visago is almost a devilish looking character with the horns and everything, and he's obviously entered into a contract with a deal with the devil type deal. That's what it seems like to me, you know.
Yeah.
But then you talk about the bow, and it's almost like, well, then Visago seems to have some respect.
Yeah, he's got his
Ezra.
Own little code, doesn't he?
He does, and I don't know if that's a bow because he's Jedi, or is it a bow just out of his own? Okay, now you've entered my circle of trust as well, and this is how I interact with my, you know, peers. So it's interesting to see on that level, but I definitely and then I want to take a quick turn to go into a ship, and it's really dark and very moody, very hell like. It's just that mood is definitely there. So I don't know if they're playing up that too much, or if it's just kind of you know, it's just for fun, but definitely had a lot of symbolism.
And it's just light enough to not make you think he's purely evil. I mean, I can't believe I didn't think about the devil horn thing. That's spot on, my friend. Very good.
Thanks.
I think that's interesting. I also think it's interesting that in martial arts, before a battle of some sort, you do bow towards each other.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a sign of a contract as well. Like it's like shaking hands. So And then Ezra takes it, you know, to comedic effect. You need a little bit of comedy.
Past few movies have been
pretty
dark
intense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So speaking of, they have to use droid couriers now to exchange info for the Empire because the communications are down, which is, of course, more symbolism. The Empire destroys their own communications. The Empire wants to take away discussion, and they want to take away communication as it is. So that's a very powerful metaphor. Black and red for the droid couriers, which is interesting.
But why not?
Yeah, exactly. Very Sith-like. Chopper is reluctant for this new plan that they have, but he agrees to go only for Kanan.
Mm-hmm.
We see Kanan being tortured. This is a part that was even harder for me to take than the earlier scene. And this is the third time in two episodes where the Inquisitor seems genuinely impressed and intrigued by Kanan. Like, he really likes that. And then we get this ominous, incredible scene where Tarkin says, look, we need to go to another location, one that never fails to extract a confession. And your mind starts to connect the dots. And we don't make that punctuation to the very last note of this particular episode.
Uh-huh.
But I don't want to jump to that until the very end, and I know we're running out of time as it is. But what do you think, guys? Did you notice the Inquisitor seeming intrigued by Kanan here as well?
Oh, definitely. I thought, he thought that he'd break him by now, because this guy obviously, you know, I've beat him with the saber before, so I must know more than he does in every aspect of the Force. I thought that... again, Tarkin being weird about referring to them. Yes, he is like the Jedi of old. You know, it's almost like an attempt just to disavow any strength in anybody that could claim to be a Jedi today.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. You know? But yeah, and that, plus the music. I think there was choral music in the background through this whole thing that was really adding to the ambiance of it. It was almost the Emperor's theme, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, like you said, Dan, it's certainly hard to see Kanan take on this torture and you know, he's a beloved character for fans watching and see this happen. It's almost, you know, it's hard because you don't know what his fate will be. But you know, it is, again, it shows his resolve too, his strength, inner strength, to see him kind of get past that and defeat the Inquisitor one more time, in a sense, on his own ground, and so. It's nice to see that as well, as far as you know, him being a strong character and having come into his own strength throughout the series.
Good point.
Yeah.
So there's just a few minutes left in the episode, and we're running low on our coffee as well. So I want to make sure we hit some important points.
Sure.
And there's really two things that we really need to see. I guess you could say three things. Chopper goes to work, and I couldn't quite make out if the name of the shuttle was Lagos. Or Logos. If it's,
I wrote that down too.
If it's Lagos, it's the commercial capital of Nigeria. But if it's Logos, that's the Aristotle method of argument, where you use a logic to prove something. I mean, they are trying to find out logically where Kanan is, and to persuade, they need evidence. So I guess you could say that. And then they persuade Zeb to continue on his particular avenue of action, because he loves being intimidating, which I think you could probably pull a lot out of. I want to jump ahead to when the ghost attacks, the Imperial droid shows up and puts out the fire. So you start to think, oh, you kind of get a soft spot in your heart for this droid. And then Chopper goes wild. He pulls out this incredible move. He opens the ship doors. The stormtroopers fly out into space.
Ew.
And then Chopper catapults himself. Like, he uses this incredible
booster
jet propulsion.
Yeah, his booster.
Yeah. And then there's this tense moment where his little arms reach out and he barely grabs that ladder. And again, like, real legit peril that something's going to happen to him. I really done a 180 on Chopper. I'm still not getting the tattooed celebration.
Oh, come on.
But it was really, really powerful. And then he does something disturbing. And Corey, I'll let you handle that one.
Well, we're talking about this whole episode, how much we've seen him in action and see him do some dubious things here. But yeah, this Imperial droid, they're kind of, hey, we should keep him around, you know. And of course, Chopper's not having that. No way. And he has a spin move and knocks him right out, which is it's so funny because it's,
he winds up and
yeah,
boom,
yeah, he knocks like him out. Jealous. Like, yeah, he's definitely jealous, and it shows his, I don't know, it shows his character. He's like, oh, back to the old chopper. You know, it's
yeah.
It's really
I was
great.
So worried for that droid. I could stand next to the edge. Yeah. Chopper's a homicidal maniac. Get away. And I can't wait for my girls to see that because I know that they're going to look at me and go, uh-oh, even before they know they see the scene.
But then the droid was okay. It just popped up like, do-do-do.
Retrojets.
Yeah.
Yes. So,
by the way, those Bobcats are they're missing a marketing opportunity by not making those in the
plushies.
Oh,
I know.
Oh, they're surely you think they will because sure. They're pretty entertaining.
Oh, yeah.
So Hera says to Ezra, Kanan has taught you well. You have taken the lead. And Corey, you mentioned that earlier. And Ezra says, look, you have too. So they've made their peace with one another. I mean, they both lied to each other, let's be honest. And then they decide, you know, we're a family. We're going to stick together. And then we hear something completely chilling. And we know as fans what this means. Kanan's headed to a place called Mustafar, and she says, I've only heard that once from Kanan. He said that's where Jedi go to die. To be continued. Boom, right across the screen.
Wow.
Again, the last image of Star Wars Rebels, the picture, the image of the logo, and the music and the silence are there, and it's chilling, guys. Chilling, because we know what this means, don't we?
Yeah, definitely, and I love how that phrase even speaks back. I mean, was Kanan literally talking about where Jedi go to die, or was he talking about hearing the duel between Anakin and Obi-Wan?
Yeah, you know? It makes you wonder how much they know.
Yeah, definitely.
About what happened with Order. I mean, we know he lived through Order 66, and we're going to hear that in Greg Weisman's comic, but how much does he know about, how much does anyone know about Anakin versus Vader? Probably nothing.
Right.
But it's still, there's some symbolism there as well.
And I like how Mustafar is coming back into it. It's almost like there was a reason why Sidious picked that planet. It must be some sort of focal point or something, because Tarkin seems to know if I take a Jedi there, we'll be able to break him. Maybe the dark side is stronger on that planet.
It's scary. And it reminds me of when I first saw Empire Strikes Back as a kid, and when Vader and Luke see each other. I was scared to death for Luke. I thought Luke was done for.
Oh, yeah.
And we don't want anything to happen to Kanan. And if he meets Darth Vader, that's not going to be good for anybody.
No.
Right, right. I mean, yeah, the inclinations here as far as Mustafar, it does call back. And it cements the series itself as not just a cartoon. You know, this is Star Wars. It just cements it for me when I heard that. I was like, oh, my gosh, this is huge. This isn't just some, you know, fun kids Saturday morning cartoon. This is Star Wars, and this is canon, and this is all wrapping into one large story. And we're all just sitting back and taking it in, and just saying Mustafar was just a stamp enough to me for me to be just kind of like, oh my gosh, they're still be able to pull shocking moments out of this series for us to enjoy.
Yeah, in fact, I actually asked my friend's wife, she's got two young children, and I know they're much younger than mine are, and they love Star Wars. But I said, you know, I really want you to watch these episodes before your husband and the kids watch them, because they're a little intense. And I know your kids are real little, and I just want you to, you know, be aware of that.
It's true.
I felt that's the first time I've ever had to say that about anything related to Star Wars. Well, maybe with the exception of Revenge of the Sith, but at least in the shows like, you know, the Clone Wars, for example, and this up to this point. So I haven't heard back from her yet, but I just wanted to make sure she knew.
Well, it'll be interesting to hear the thoughts on that, because I completely agree with you. So guys, we're getting real close to the end.
Sure, sure.
Go ahead, Corey. Tell me your last minute thoughts or reflections on this.
Sure. There was one thing that I didn't tell you guys going into talking about this episode, is that I watch it with my kids, and I don't normally do that upon my first viewing. And they just happened to be around, and I thought, oh, they should watch it with me. And it was a different dynamic. I usually watch it with them a second time, but this was the first time around, and so for them to pick out certain things, for example, Ezra and Zeb fighting on the walker was really funny. They liked that. The things they pull out where Ezra was, oh, he's really cool with his lightsaber and doing things and taking control. They picked up on those cues, and they also picked up on Chopper, you know, kind of not holding back and doing his stuff. And they felt sad for Kanan. You could just, they were asking questions during the thing. What about this? What about that? And it was just interesting to sit there and watch with them and get their perspective. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a series for all ages, and they can all pick out different things, but they seem to pick up a lot of the things we talked about here too, just in their conversation. Just, so some of the points that these characters are hitting in this episode are definitely seen through all different eyes and different ages. So I think it's really great and calls back to, you know, all these great performers and these great story writers and all these crew that make these episodes, and they're just doing a wonderful job.
Oh, yeah. And I think it's good too. I mean, now that you mentioned, I tend to have a different point of view exactly about how to expose children so that they're aware in today's society. Mm-hmm. And I think a story like this shows them that, you know, there are not good people out there all over the place. There are some people that just have malintent. And we can see this in these characters. These people are torturing your hero, you know, and that's shocking. Again, that was not an intended pun, but it might be stunning to their system. But I think it also helps develop their mind and think, you know, I should be aware in the future. And I guess I say that with a certain background that, you know, I think that's important to teach children today. You know, mine are a little older, so they're you know, yeah, dad, you know, in one ear out the other. But
right.
But I didn't think about it from that perspective, though. So.
I thought overall it was a very powerful, emotional episode. I said before I was really worried about Kanan and Chopper and what was going to happen to them, and because we don't know their fates, it just adds so much power to this. And knowing that it's to be continued, and we have to wait, next few episodes are not going to be on the Disney XD app, so... Wow. Oh. They've really set the bar at an incredible level, and I can't wait to see what happens. So guys, 20 seconds or less for each of us. Overall grades for the episode. Taxis, go ahead and start with.
I'll give that, you know what? I'll give it a solid A+. I just think that, sure, it wasn't as pivotal in my mind as far as, you know, confrontations. And yes, this was a build up episode, but just the fundamental shift in the relationships of all the characters we've seen, you know, good or bad. I think this just made it just so critical and crucial to see.
Corey, what about you?
Yeah, I agree. I definitely give it an A+ because it's just got a lot going on for it. And I wish we had more time to explore it more, because this is a crucial episode for this whole series. We definitely see the characters act in different ways, but also work together in different ways to come together as a family still. You know, at the end of the episode, they still are a family working together, and we still get that feeling, but in a different way without Kanan. And it's hard to see him go through what he does in this, but I'm hoping that the next two episodes will be will be good. But and in those respects, but yeah, this is definitely a pivotal episode for this series. Very good.
And just the way it ends alone with that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You just feel in your gut, you know, he's got to go to Mustafar, which to this point you're like, as a fan, oh, yeah, Darth Vader. And now you're like, oh, no, Darth Vader. This isn't good. This is not good. I'm really concerned. And you know that season one's almost over, so it's scary. I'm going to give this one an A-. And A- is very good. It's excellent. A is excellent. Why is this not an A+? Because I don't know. Something tells me this is an A-, because A+ needs to be the best of the best, and there's still so much that's out there that we don't know about. So it's still very, very strong. I thought it was tremendous. I enjoyed the previous episode of Call to Action a little bit more, and we're going to see what happens, but very, very, very exciting.
Well, what if this was a quiz and not a major exam?
Still the
that's
same.
True.
All right.
That's
okay.
The way to look at it.
Still incredible.
All right. Wonderful.
All right. Well, Darth, it sure has been awesome having you on Rebels Reactions. And before we let you go, naturally, we must ask you our 5 questions. Are you ready, sir?
I'm ready and willing.
Perfect. So what is your favorite Star Wars movie?
Just hands down, Empire. I mean, when I think about what crafted the love of that entire universe to me, I just think of the power of that movie. Just the might of the Empire. As a kid, when I'd be mowing the lawn on my riding lawnmower, my dad's actually, I'd pretend that all the fleeing bugs were rebels. So, you know, and it's a good way to branch out, especially, you know, with you two had your wives on. That was a real fun show.
Well, thank you.
And the romance aspect, of course, appeals to my wife with things like in that movie. But yeah, I'm just unabashed, unashamed, Empire, hands down.
Very good. Your favorite Star Wars character?
You know, I guess if I was going to go with the Rebels, it'd have to be Han Solo. If I was going to go, of course, with the Empire or the Dark Side, I'd have to say Sidious, just because Han Solo, like, thumbs his nose at Law, and Sidious is, of course, a tyrant trying to bring more law on the universe.
Exactly. Good point. Very well. No one's ever broken down to the good side and the bad side, so that's kind of fun.
No, thanks.
So what is your favorite line of dialogue or film moment?
I think, again, in Empire, the culmination of the duel between Luke and Vader, and that entire fight scene, we just quote it left and right. You know, impressive, most impressive, things like that. And other than that, when I'm driving through traffic, I usually quote Biggs when he's like, I can't see him, you know, around. So throw that out there.
That's great. That's great. If you collect, what is your favorite collectible that you own?
I'd have to say lightsabers. I don't know. I'm a saber fanatic. Mm-hmm. We like sneaking up on each other and scaring each other around the house. And so when my wife is maybe, you know, working in the kitchen doing something, I'll sneak up with a saber and like stick it right next to her like Mace Windu and fire it up. She gets me back later. Don't worry. But, you know, I have about 3 Ultra Sabers, and I've been really happy with them. And it's a fun way for the kids and I to kind of engage with each other.
Absolutely.
Corey's got an Ultra Saber, don't you?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the Archon version too, so it's pretty great.
Ooh. Yeah, that's nice. I actually downloaded a different sound font for my own, but the kids like the Jedi fonts on theirs, so.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Classic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I didn't even know you could do that. I am intrigued, gentlemen.
You can change the colors too, and yeah, you could. There's a variety of things that I don't dabble in that too much. I mean, I'd like to be able to do that. I'm just not that talented. So, kudos to you. Yeah,
I just think it's fun to. Yeah, you know, definitely. I just think it's fun to be able to tweak it to your own specifications. And that Emerald Driver you're talking about, I did ask Emery Harris when he was in town if they could retrofit to add those after the fact. He said, yeah, which they just moved to Houston about a year ago, if I remember correctly. So they're a lot closer.
Very cool.
So last but not least, what particular messages or themes about the Star Wars saga resonate or speak to you?
It's kind of a theme that I've applied in my life. And, I've referenced, earlier in our conversation that there's, to me, one of the great truths of life is that people are who people are. And I'm not really the originator of that concept, at least in the modern sense. There was a gentleman named John Douglas, who was one of the groundbreakers for criminal profiling with the FBI. And in his book, Mindhunter, he was working bunco and kept arresting the same person, bookie, week after week almost. And he asked the guy, he said, why do you do this? He said, well, it's who I am, John. And that was like the whole foundation that made him launch into the concept of people do what they do because people are who they are. And I think in Star Wars, you can see that, even especially in the character of Vader at the end. No matter what's happened to him, there is that good in him that he turns back to at that most critical time. just like Visago in the episode tonight, Ezra knows what Visago is and how to play him to a certain extent because he understands the person of Visago. So I think that's a theme that you can see usually, especially in heroic tales. Mm-hmm. You know, the good guys are going to be the good guys. The bad guys are going to be the bad guys.
Agreed.
Yeah, good point.
Thank you.
So, Darth, where can folks find you online or get a hold of you if they want to ask you a question or just get in touch?
Well, I'm usually trolling about the Twitterverse and at Darth Taxis. And, of course, there's DarthTaxis@yahoo.com if they'd like to send me an email. That's perfectly fine. And, I don't know, Facebook does not find me acceptable. So,
it's your Sith qualities. I don't know.
Right.
You know, I don't mind. There's too many pictures on Facebook for my liking.
Well, it has been a really, really awesome having you on, your insights and your knowledge, and you're clearly prepared to have a cup of coffee, and that is awesome and not at all surprising considering the intelligence of your Twitter account, and it's just always great to engage with you and hear your perspectives on the Star Wars saga. So, Darth Taxis, thank you so much for being a guest on Coffee with Kenobi.
Oh, well, thank you both for having me. I really appreciate this time together and can't wait to meet you guys in the celebration.
Absolutely.
Yeah, good deal.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed at Coffee with Kenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.